Hello, everybody. Welcome to Killing Time. I'm IA.
And I have many names.
Yes, the man with many names. They call him Beelzebub. They call him Mephisto. They call him Mr. Florida Gator himself. Actually, they don't call him the first two names very often. That's just when he really, really is a bad son of a bitch. And that doesn't happen often. So it doesn't happen. We've got the one and the only, the Juice Pop, JB, Jess Bob. How's it going?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's our first episode recorded in 2017. It might not be the first episode that comes out in 2017, but I aimed to change all that this year because I got a lot more free time. And do you remember how I told you I would be installing a desk in my loft area?
Yes.
Okay, I did that, actually, and now this whole setup is on a desk. I'm no longer using cardboard boxes to hold my stuff. I've got a little table in front of me. It feels a lot more like my old setup. I just need to get a mouse pad because my mouse doesn't do well on these surfaces. And I'm excited because it feels relatively comfortable up here to do work. So I'm excited about this. The downside is I tried to get a drum throne because like this loft, there's the ceiling there, a drum throne to sit on, which you thought it would be low enough, right?
Yeah.
The only problem was the padding on the seat is so thick that unless I slouch, my head hits the ceiling. So I need to get a shoddy drum throne with a thin pad. Because right now I'm on a tiny, tiny ottoman, and this is what Manhattan living is like when you don't make a boatload of money. So that's fine. Anyway, all that aside, this is Killing Time, the show that searches for entertainment that doesn't suck. We watch a lot of crap, so you don't have to, because that's important. And I think what we're going to start with is the Power Rangers trailer. Now, this thing dropped fairly recently, and you've seen the trailer, right?
Yes.
What'd you take away from the trailer? What do you think about the way this looks?
Well, I like that the trailer didn't give a lot away. In fact, the trailer, you only see them getting into their costumes kind of towards the very end. I like the kind of mysterious route it's going. Like I said, it doesn't give much away. It actually interested me, and I'm not a huge Power Rangers fan. It was a little bit after my time. But I thought, I thought the movie was actually going to be horrible, and the trailer made me think it would be semi-horrible. So
I am well-versed in Power Rangers. I was a bit of a fan when it first came out. Just Bob and I, Juice Pop, and I were about the same age, about 6 months apart.
Yeah.
But the thing is, not only have I watched the episodes, I had a younger brother at the time who was very into the show, who also controlled the remote control during that time period.
Plus,
I have a six-year-old who watches on Netflix the vast catalog of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, Power Rangers Zeo, etc., Jungle Fury, like every variant of it. So
what did you think of it?
Okay, so I thought it was a very serious-toned trailer. I don't think it's really meant for kids necessarily. It feels like it's meant for those who grew up on it.
No, I think it's meant for our age group.
Yeah,
I think that's who they're gearing it towards.
It's definitely looks like I think it'll have enough smarts that it'll keep maybe parents engaged or people slightly younger than me and you who are like, okay, I liked Power Rangers as a kid, but now I want it to have a bit of a serious take. But then again, it is it's Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, right? It's just Power Rangers the movie. So it's still a crazy concept. You have this alien giving powers to these kids through a robot. So who's fighting basically an evil witch on the moon. Okay? There you go. That's a silly premise, but you could see with all the costumes and the way the trailer was shown, it looks like they have a very serious tone while having a bit of levity to it, which I liked because, if they went full on kitschy, it might just be boring and you wouldn't want to show up when you're in your 20s. Kids might like it, and I don't think they're going for a kids movie, so I thought the trailer was well shot. I heard a rumor that the director of Chronicle said, "This movie rips me off entirely." Which
I could see that. I could see it.
Which is apparently very high praise because Chronicle was apparently an amazing movie, which I haven't seen. Have you seen Chronicle?
It was excellent. Yes. A very good movie. Definitely go watch it. Anybody who hasn't seen it.
From what I've heard, Chronicle is a movie about kids getting powers in the real world. And they're recording themselves doing this kind of real new world stuff because every now and then you have a movie where like, oh, we've got powers. Oh, that's normal now. And it becomes normalized versus going, wait, this is messed up.
Yeah, Chronicle really looked at it from like a real-life point of view. What would happen if a kid got powers?
Yeah, and if they're responsible enough. And in the trailer, they even show a bit of tension between Zordon and the kids. Because as far as Zordon's concerned, flat out, that these youth these youthful people should not have such powers right away. But Alpha 5's like, this is all we could get, so this is what we're going to do. Now, I have a little bit more insight into the Power Rangers, because back when I was at the Consumer Electronics Show for work, Qualcomm had a Power Rangers movie-based tie-in VR thing that I got to try out. So this was pretty neat. So you show up to the Qualcomm booth, and there's a line, you know, a couple people deep, and they have these five circles, color, you know, all color-coded to match the Power Rangers, and they also have this VR headset, kind of like, think like a Gear VR kind of thing, but with a big decal over the front, like the Power Rangers mask. What annoyed me, though, wasn't a full helmet, because I thought they should have gone, you know, all in if you're going to do this. But that's a little quibble. So I get to try it out. And in this, you actually get to see what Zordon looks like, or at least a VR version of him with low-res graphics, or lower-res graphics than you're going to see in the movie. And you got to see Alpha 5. So that was pretty neat. So Zordon just shows a little bit more of his lack of liking of the Power Rangers as kids. And Alpha 5, again, is like, this is what we got. And Zordon's like, hey, maybe they'll like, this might be spoilers, guys, so hang on. He goes, maybe they'll like vehicles. So then they show us the Zords. And so you, as the first person, you get to look around in every direction, which is fantastic. And you get to look at the Zords. And in theory, they're to scale. So when you're looking at them with this VR headset, they are enormous. And you can stare up and down and left and right. And the thing is, the one you stared at the end, the longest, you get to pilot for like all of a second. Now, I was being very careful because the Mastodon looked really cool. But I wanted to pilot the Tyrannosaurus, of course, because, you know, it's the Red Ranger. He's the leader. I want to do that.
Of course.
The Pterodactyl looked really great. It looked like a fighter jet. The Sabertooth Cat looked okay. The Mastodon, again, looked amazing. I'm forgetting one. The Triceratops apparently is awesome, but I kind of looked away real quick because I'm like, this little circle shows up on screen. That's your viewfinder. And I was staring at the Triceratops, and I noticed it was getting smaller, so I got to look for the Red Ranger. Pick up the Red Ranger, and then you get into the actual Zord, and you then... Here's some, like, you picked the Red Ranger, huh? Oh, you must be fearless like me, and blah, 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 some BS. And you take off. This whole thing goes off in about 3 minutes, this whole thing. The only thing I wanted to know, and I was hoping, and they copped out in the VR thing, was how on earth is a Megazord, when they're combined, not one of the, just the singular ones, how does the controls work? Because I don't know if you remember your Power Rangers, I mean, particularly Mighty Morphin. When they're all in the command center, not the command center, when they're all in that one area.
One room, yeah.
There's five of them, right?
Yeah.
And when they want to do something and strike at the villain, they all perform a coordinated karate move or some kind of martial art move. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
So, at the time, I'm not thinking when it first runs, gesture-based controls or some kind of, maybe they're seeing some augmented reality through their helmets because... That wasn't a thing back then, or at least it wasn't thought about, and sure as heck wasn't shown on camera. But I'm like, why are they all moving at the same time? What is happening? I was really hoping that in the VR experience, they would go, okay, if you want this Megazord itself, when you finally join up together, if you want it to move right, all five of you at the same time have to do this and move your arms out. And if you don't, you'll fall over or something. I just want to know how... Does it work? Because there's no explanation yet.
I always assumed there was some kind of mind link between them.
Now, Pacific
with
Rim.
With the helmets. Yeah, like Pacific Rim, how they linked the two minds, and so you were kind of working together. I always assumed that's what their helmets did.
I loved the physics and the explanation of that. They could only control half of the robot at the time. They got to work coordinated for it to work. And maybe that's the case. But then again, I also came up with an alternate theory because I had way too much time on my plane ride. What if, because this is an alien technology, what if the actual original pilot was this massive blobular thing that was about five people wide with 10 arms and 10 legs, and it only had to go like this to it. But to the system, it's got no problem recognizing this. But to fool it, you need to have five individual human beings because you're not going to find the blobular guy.
Could be, but how would the blobular guy fly the five different things when they're apart?
Carefully. I didn't think that went through.
So, okay.
That's a good question. How does he do that? Maybe he also is a Zord kind of thing. He just joins together. I don't know. I want to scratch that theory out right now.
Sorry to kill the theory.
Blobular Man is not a thing. That's going to be the title. Blobular Man, not MMPR pilot. you idiot. Okay. That's a movie that's not coming out. It's coming out March 24th, a date that will live in infamy. Let's talk about Rogue One real quick. Now, it's at this point, it's January 10th when we're recording this. If you haven't seen Rogue One, we're going to spoil it. Also, yes. If you've seen Star Wars Episode 4,
you already know what happens.
It's spoiled it for you already.
Yeah.
What'd you think of Rogue One?
Getting to that part where I knew the entire... You pretty much know the story. You know how it's going to end. So it's not like you go into it, you know, trying to be amazed or, you know, find something new. You actually want to see the link between, you know, what you know has to happen and how you know, the fourth movie starts. And I really thought they did a good job. I liked a lot of the actors, and I liked that there was some character development. You know, it's the world is so huge, but this movie was so focused on just these couple of characters that you actually got to see them grow and change and actually got to know them a little bit. Whereas in the bigger movies, they're so busy creating all this action and doing all this stuff, you don't really get to know the characters as well as you did in this small ensemble piece.
Yeah, so the Rogue One, the movie basically focuses, I'd say, maybe five or six people and one or two droids. And it's very tight-knit, and it's gritty. It really is a war movie. If you're thinking about, I'm going to see lightsabers, I'm going to see stuff.
No.
This is all about war. And people are like, oh, this is the first Star Wars movie to focus on the war. It's like, no, they had wars and everything, dogfights and such. But this one's down on the ground. This felt more like a World War II movie because there's even a beach scene where there's a lot of, you know, running. There's a lot of physicality. It's not just I'm piloting a ship, I'm firing laser beams, and a lot less magic. There's obviously one scene at the very end, which is amazing because it's Darth Vader's scene.
Oh my God, that was one of the best scenes in the movie. What I loved was, the way they made Darth Vader, he really felt like a monster in this movie. You felt like why people are scared of him. You got to see, not from Luke's point of view, not from the, you know, Jedi's point of view, but from just a normal person point of view, him coming in and just being scary and kicking ass.
And by the way, that scene is very necessary because it's kind of a palate cleanser, because at that point, the movie's on a downbeat. Like, if you've ever seen...
Oh, man. Oh, yeah.
If you've ever seen Toy Story 3... When they're going towards the furnace, and you're like, okay, they're going to get out of it somehow. But that fear you start feeling, that your eyes are welling up, you're like, they're not actually going to do this, are they? And this movie, because you don't see any of the characters in Star Wars Episode 4, spoiler, they all die.
Yep.
Slowly. And
the fact that in 4, they say it was a suicide mission. We lost a lot of people getting this information.
And they did such a good job in each of the characters. When K2SO, when the droid itself gets killed, I started to well up a little bit. I'm like, no, I like K2.
And he was good.
Maybe he could have been reprogrammed. He would be, you know, some kind of thing that he's in the background. And then when they killed almost a priest character, the guy who was saying, the force is with me, I'm one with the force, the thing. When he gets killed, I'm like, oh no, I'm going to cry now. But then his buddy goes out and tries to kill everybody. So that was kind of neat. But then you have the two leads, like, hugging on the beach while the furnace, essentially, from Toy Story 3 is coming at them. And you're like...
Deep impact moment.
They're not going to get this. They're not getting out of this. This is it. This is over.
Then
they're gone. Yeah. And so it's like, holy crap. Everybody from the beginning, nobody makes it on the mission. The mission is successful because the plan is to get the Death Star stuff in a kind of convenient way, with Stardust being a code name. That's kind of the silliest part of the movie. But it was just, I would say, it's weird. It's shocking, but it's not shocking. But to have the guts to not have a single character kind of have one ray of hope and just wiping it all out.
But that's why they immediately went and had a couple scenes that tied it, like we're talking tied it right into number 4. Like shot for shot, the last shot of Rogue One is right before the first shot of Episode 4.
Yeah, so you've got this. This could take place like 20 seconds before Episode 4. It's got, and that Darth Vader scene, like I said, was a palate cleanser because he shows up at the Imperial March, and he's trying to get that piece of data back. And you basically have the most inept rebel guards on the planet because they're all watching Vader, you know, force choke everybody and raise him up. I don't know why the guy in the back doesn't shoot him, but that's beside the point. I would chalk that up to fear. Just yeah, absolute fear. Because
he's a scary individual, yeah.
So it's a destruction scene. There's actually an animated version of it online done in a 16-bit version. It looks like a Super Nintendo version. It's pretty kick-ass. I might have a link or show part of it right now. And it was great, very necessary. And then you have the CGI Carrie Fisher showing up as Princess Leia, which happened several weeks before her untimely death, which was kind of even weirder. What did you think of the CGI, one, resurrection of Tarkin?
I thought Tarkin was done really well, you know, because of the scenes Tarkin was in, you know, it was very dark, and I know how they used CGI for the face, but they used the actual actor's eyes because people always say the issue with CGI characters is the eyes. And I thought it came off really well. I mean, I thought it's some of the best, most realistic CGI I've seen. Leia, I didn't think was as good. I don't know why. I just, something seemed off on that one a little bit.
I think when it comes to Tarkin, because he has such craggly features, it's a little bit easier to have that older face in that kind of darkened place.
Yeah, you're right.
And also,
and Leia was more porcelain skin, and that makes it different.
And very bright. So you had all this brightness. So maybe that was part of the issue. And also, there's the idea of we have a very, very good visual of what Princess Leia looks like versus Tarkin, because he's got a couple of scenes and everything, but he's not as memorable or elite by any means. But I didn't really care for the CG on either one. I thought they were really, really good and very close to, I mean, perfect, which is a very hard thing to do just in general, because this is art. And the weird thing is, as human beings, we know when something's slightly off. But when they had that introduction to Tarkin and he had that reflection off the window, if they kept him that way, there is no way I would have even noticed. Because that weird reflection thing had this excellence of, okay, you have some vagueness, and that's just far off enough that I can't distinguish that's not really him. Because they did a great job with that. When he turns around, they got in really close. And they really tried to go, okay, let's see if we can push this in. And I think it was about 95% there.
And yeah, close.
If they ever retouch it, I'm sure like on a 1080p screen, it's going to be fine. It's going to look great. But on a giant projector watching it at the theater, maybe it doesn't hold up as well. So is there anything else you'd like to say about Rogue One before we wrap up this episode?
I think you should see it. And one thing that was funny, everybody I talked to said they immediately wanted to go home and watch episode 4.
Oh, I got to tell you something.
After they left the movie.
I got to tell you something off air about episode 4, because I got to see a very special cut of it. Anyway, that's going to wrap up this episode of Killing Time. You can support the show at patreon.com/Iaz, and we're going to have a lot more episodes this year. That's the goal, and we're going to see everybody next time.
Bye. Let's do it.